reading again the very first verse of Psalm 40. I waited patiently for the Lord. He turned to me and heard my cry. Do you know what it is to wait for the Lord? Do you know what it is to need something from God, or even just to want something from God, but not be given it? That can be a really painful place, that place of waiting. It can be a faith testing place, especially if the waiting goes on and on and on and on. There are so many things in our lives and in our world that aren't the way they're supposed to be. I mean, can you imagine what it must be like to live in Ukraine these days? Can you imagine shivering with your family in an unheated home in a bombed city, unsure if you'll have food through the week, praying to God to end the war, only to wake up morning after morning after morning, still waiting for God to act? Can you imagine what it's like to be a refugee living in a camp in a country that's not your home, surrounded by people who don't actually want you in their country, too focused on survival to manage the post-traumatic stress that tears at your soul? Can you imagine what it's like to pray for God to rescue you day after day and night after night for years without a response? Maybe those are things that you can't imagine. They maybe feel too big, too foreign, but maybe you do know what it's like to be stuck in a job that just sucks the life out of you, or working under a boss who treats you like you don't matter or have nothing of worth to offer. And you pray for a new job, you pray for a new boss, and nothing happens. You just keep praying. Maybe you're so far in debt, you don't think you'll ever be free of it. So you pray for a way out. You pray and you pray and you pray, and still you're drowning in debt. When do you give up? When do we stop praying? When do we just stop waiting? In 2 Peter, which is very close towards the end of the New Testament, in 2 Peter, the author of that letter is writing to people who are ready to stop waiting. Now, what they've been waiting for is the return of Jesus. They heard the promises that Jesus was going to return, and with Jesus was going to be God's kingdom. They heard the promises that all the suffering and pain, all the things that are wrong with the world, are going to be gone with the arrival of that kingdom. And they have been waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and praying, but nothing happens. And so Peter writes to them these words: the Lord is not slow about his promise, as some think of slowness, but is patient with you, not wanting any to perish, but all to come to repentance. In other words, your waiting is not in vain. God isn't ignoring you. God isn't deaf to your pleas and your pain. God hears. God cares. God is doing something even if you can't see it. So keep waiting and keep praying. The psalmist of Psalm 40 writes, I waited patiently for the Lord. And really, that's the challenge in the waiting, isn't it? It's not just about waiting, but it's about waiting patiently. To me, to wait patiently implies that the person who's waiting has faith that their waiting isn't in vain. They're holding on to that hope that God really is listening, whatever it feels like in the moment. They have faith that even if there's no evidence that God's doing anything, that God is in fact listening and he does in fact hear, that God does have compassion, that God does want the same things as you want, at least insofar as what we want lines up with his love for us and the realities and the values of his kingdom. But the longer the waiting goes on, the more difficult it is to maintain this faith. It's a hard thing. It's one thing if, like, you're waiting, it's the beginning of December and you're waiting for Christmas to come and boom, eventually it gets here and you're good. But what if you're waiting, what if you're praying and it's months or years that you just keep waiting? The more difficult it is to keep waiting, to keep praying and hoping, that's why it's important to hear other people's stories about their waiting and about God's response to their waiting. That's why I titled this sermon, What's Your Story? Not Waiting Sucks, which is the non-published title. It's so important to not forget other times in our own lives when we waited and waited and waited for God to do something, and he finally did. That's what the psalmist in Psalm 40 is doing. He or she, we don't know, male or female, is remembering. And in that remembering, there's hope for the next time. There's hope for the next person. Because the psalmist isn't just saying it to himself. It's a psalm. It's meant to be proclaimed in a worship environment for others to have hope, because the psalmist has experienced God acting after all that waiting. The psalmist writes, "I waited patiently for the Lord. He turned to me and heard my cry. He lifted me out of the slimy pit, out of the mud and the mire." Man, I love the language of this psalm. That NIV translation, which is what I just read, is especially descriptive. He lifted me up out of the slimy pit. The NRSV is a little bit less visceral. The red Bibles on the chairs here are the NRSV version. It's a little bit less visceral in its description, though probably a bit closer to the original language. He drew me up from the desolate pit. What do you picture in this description? A desolate pit. It's a lonely, isolated, hopeless kind of a place. If you add the NIV adjective of a slimy, desolate pit, oh, you get the extreme dimension of just yuck, gross, ew, what a horrible place to be. The NIV continues, "He lifted you up out of the mud and the mire." The NRSV reads, "out of the miry bog." Very similar ideas, and neither of them are pleasant images to work with. It's a desolate, lonely, hopeless, slimy pit. It's a smelly, wet landscape that threatens to suck you under with every step that you take. And I wonder if any of you have ever been in a place like that, not necessarily literally, maybe you've been there literally, but not so much literally as metaphorically, because as often as the case with poetry, it's trying to give you this image to work with, these feelings to work with, to get at, that you can take any time of your life that may fit with that. Have you ever experienced that lonely, isolated hopelessness, the kind that threatens to destroy you, to drown you, that feels impossible to escape, impossible to pull yourself up out of? Because that's where the psalmist who wrote Psalm 40 was. It wasn't a place that was conducive to waiting, especially to waiting patiently. It feels like you're drowning, like you're dying. How do you just wait patiently in that? How long can someone be expected to wait when they're drowning in mud and in slime? And yet the psalmist waited patiently for the Lord. And we don't know how they waited. The psalmist doesn't tell us how they waited. All we know is that the psalmist waited patiently for the Lord, and the Lord heard. The psalmist writes of the Lord, "He drew me up," or "he lifted me out and set my feet on a rock and gave me a firm place to stand. He put a new song in my mouth, a hymn of praise to our God." The psalmist waited patiently for the Lord, even while in the midst of the worst of circumstances, and the Lord heard the psalmist's cry. Now, I don't know what it is that you're waiting for. I do know that God is not deaf to your cry. Even if it feels like he's ignoring you completely, God is not deaf to your cry. I don't know how long you've been waiting or how hopeless you maybe feel, but I know that God has not forgotten about you or abandoned you in your ministry. The entire Bible from beginning to end is a testimony to the fact that God does not abandon us or forget us or ignore us or just get busy doing other things. I know that God will answer someday, somehow, but I don't know how long you'll have to wait. The people of Israel were slaves in Egypt for somewhere in the realm of 400 years. So if you didn't feel hopeless before that fact, go ahead, feel hopeless and desolate in your waiting. They waited 400 years to be rescued from slavery. But the thing is, God was with them even in the midst of that. God wasn't ignoring them. God was acting. God was shaping them and doing all sorts of work in the midst of that. The psalmist of Psalm 40 knows that this story of rescue, that this story of waiting needs to be shared. The psalmist knows that people need to hear their story. And so after this beautiful description of God's response, the psalmist writes, many will see and fear and put their trust in the Lord. The psalmist knows that their experience needs to be shared because the psalmist knows that their story will empower others to trust and to wait patiently themselves. And the psalmist continues in verse 4 with a beatitude, which is a fancy word for a statement of blessing. Blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, who does not look to the proud or to those who turn aside to false gods. See, when we're in a really tough spot, when we've been waiting and waiting and waiting for God to act, it's easy to give up waiting on God, but it doesn't mean we stop trying to find a way out. We're still drowning. God isn't showing up, so we start looking other places. When God doesn't act, we look for someone or something else that maybe can help. We're drawn to those who offer quick fixes or easy solutions, even if what they offer us costs us everything we have or stretches us beyond anything that we thought we were capable of. We grab at it because we're desperate and we need out. We need to be lifted up. We can't keep going the way that we've been going, and God isn't answering. God isn't responding. God doesn't seem to care, so we turn somewhere else. We turn to psychics for hope. We turn to charlatans and quacks for medicines and therapies. We take out payday loans from legalized loan sharks at exorbitant interest rates, desperate for relief from debt or financial pressure. We listen for promises and prophecies that make us feel better, regardless of whether or not they're true. Or maybe we drink ourselves into oblivion for a while so we don't have to feel. Or we go numb for hours on end in front of the television so we don't have to think. But none of these alternatives to waiting on God are helpful. Not one of them has the actual power to lift us up out of the slimy or desolate pit, out of the mud or the miry bog. Not one of them has the power to set our feet on solid ground and make our steps secure. Nothing but God, no one but God can do that. Waiting is hard. It's really hard. Waiting patiently for God to act, for God to hear, can feel impossible at times. But in the end, as the psalmist writes, it is the one who trusts in the Lord who is blessed. What is it that you're waiting for these days? Is there maybe something that's going on in your life for which or about which you are crying out to God? How tempted are you to give up at this point in things? How tempted are you to look for somewhere else for an answer for hope? I want us to pause with those questions for just a few moments. I think that the psalmist who wrote Psalm 40, I think that that person understood what it was like to want to give up. They don't say it specifically, but I think the way that they describe that slimy pit, that miry, muddy bog, I expect that they knew what it was like to want to give up. I think that the psalmist understood what it felt like to wonder where God was or if God was listening. And I think that might be why this psalm was written, because that temptation to give up, it really is a common human experience. If you find yourself tempted to give up on the waiting, it's not because you're a bad person or a bad Christian or anything like this. It's a really common human experience. I suspect that even the most faithful of Jesus followers that you can think of, at some point when things have been bad and there doesn't seem to be any end in sight, even the most faithful Christians you can think of are tempted to stop praying for relief, to stop waiting on God to do something. But if we hear someone else's story of their own waiting, of God's eventual rescue or response, it helps us. It gives us just a little bit more hope, a bit more of a push to keep waiting at least just one more day. The psalmists, they came out of their time of waiting and despair having experienced God's rescue, and that experience led to praise, it led to worship. In verse 5, the psalmist writes, many, Lord my God, are the wonders you've done, the things you planned for us. None can compare with you. Were I to speak and tell of your deeds, they would be too many to declare. I think that when we're in the slimy, desolate pit in the mud and the miry bog, it's very hard to remember those truths. It's hard to believe these things about God. I think when we're in that place of despair and of hopelessness, it's very hard to remember the wonders that God has done or the promises that God has made, which is why we need other people to remind us. We need other people we trust to tell us the truth of these things because we can't tell them to ourselves when we're in it, at least not in any kind of a convincing way. But as we hear others tell their stories, as we experience others worshiping God, maybe we can push through another day. Maybe we can wait another week. Maybe we can just not give up one more hour. When we wait patiently for the Lord and eventually experience the kind of relief that the psalmist describes, worship is a natural response. Thanksgiving is a natural response. That's what's happening in the next five verses of Psalm 40. Listen to the voice of the psalmist, the voice of one who waited patiently for the Lord until the Lord heard their cry. Sacrifice and offering you did not desire, but my ears you've opened. Burnt offerings and sin offerings you did not require. I wonder if the psalmist had tried those things to get God's attention. I wonder if the psalmist had gone to the temple with sacrifices, with offerings, thinking, you know, if I can just give enough, if I can just sacrifice enough, if I can just make a big enough offering, then maybe God will listen. Maybe my waiting will be over, that maybe God will work. But it didn't work. Listen to what happened next. This is where it starts in verse 7. Then I said, here I am. I have come. It is written about me in the scroll. I desire to do your will, my God. Your law is within my heart. God isn't bribed with sacrifices and offerings. All God wants of us is us. That's it. He already loves us. We don't have to convince him to love us. He already cares about the things that we care about. We don't have to persuade him to care. When all is said and done, it is quite simply the waiting itself that is enough. Because in that waiting, we declare that we will not give up on God. We declare that God won't give up and hasn't given up on us. This is what the psalmist has learned in the waiting, that they finally give voice to now that they have been lifted up out of the pit. Listen to verses 9 and 10. I proclaim your saving acts in the great assembly. I do not seal my lips, Lord, as you know. I do not hide your righteousness in my heart. I speak of your faithfulness and your saving help. I do not conceal your love and your faithfulness from the great assembly. Can we say the same thing? Can we say that we share with each other the ways we have been saved by God? Can we say that we don't hide God's righteousness, that we speak of his faithfulness and of the way God helped us? I hope that we can. Because I know that when I'm in that pit, when I'm ready to give up on waiting, other people's experiences are sometimes the only thing that keeps me going. The only thing that keeps me waiting patiently for the Lord to hear my cry and lift me up. And I know that I'm not alone in that. None of us are meant to journey this journey of faith, this life of faith, on our own. When we're weak, we need the strong around us to hold us up. And when we're strong, we need to be holding up the weak. This faith, this following of Jesus is meant to be lived in a community where we have this give and take, where we hold up when we're strong and we allow ourselves to be held up when we're weak. We need to be in this together. And if we don't share our stories with each other, whether they're stories of God's faithfulness and rescue or stories of our own hopelessness and despair, we won't be in this together. And if we're not in this together, I fear we will be swallowed by the mud and the miry bog around us. So the thing about the pit is, it's not just a one and done kind of a thing. It's not like we go through a hard time and eventually we experience God's rescue and then everything's lovely for the rest of our life. Wouldn't that be nice if it only ever happened once in our lives? But it doesn't work like that, does it? Because life isn't like that. There are lots of ups and downs all through our lives. And because of that, even when we're rescued from one slimy pit, we will one day find ourselves in another. And I think that's one of the most powerful things about Psalm 40 is that it doesn't end on the triumphant note of worship and a promise to proclaim. Instead, listen to how it continues. Beginning in verse 11, we didn't read past verse 11, but the psalm continues from there. Do not withhold your mercy from me, Lord. May your love and faithfulness always protect me. For troubles without number surround me. This is the same psalmist who was writing, the Lord heard my cry and rescued me, and writes now, for troubles without number surround me. My sins have overtaken me and I cannot see. There are more than the hairs of my head and my heart fails within me. Be pleased to save me, Lord. Come quickly, Lord, to help me. Here the psalmist is again in need of rescue. Here the psalmist is again crying out to the Lord to be saved. See, this is the reality of our human experience. Bad things happen. Suffering and pain is a reality of this life. Sometimes our own choices contribute to that suffering and pain. Other times our hardships are completely the fault of others. The point isn't about fault or about blame. The point is that these things are part of life, this side of God's kingdom. Over and over again, we find ourselves in need of God's rescue. And over again, we find ourselves waiting. Sometimes we hardly wait any time at all, but I think more often we wait and we wait and we wait and we wait. In the waiting, do we trust in God's faithfulness? In the waiting, do we trust in God's goodness? In the waiting, do we remember the ways that God has acted in the past? In the waiting, do we listen for other people's stories of God's rescue? Listen to how the psalm ends in verse 17. But as for me, I am poor and needy. May the Lord think of me. You are my help and my deliverer. You are my God. Do not delay. Wouldn't that be a great prayer? Last year, I talked a lot about writing bits of scripture on post-it notes and sticking it somewhere that you'll see it a lot on your bathroom mirror or your door out of the house. Psalm 40:17, what a great one to put on a post-it note somewhere. But as for me, I am poor and needy. May the Lord think of me. You are my help and my deliverer. You are my God. Do not delay. The psalmist is clearly back in the pit, back in the mud and the miry bog. But the psalmist is once again able to wait patiently for God, even while crying out to God, because God has proven to be faithful and good. God has previously been the psalmist's help and deliverer, which means the psalmist can count on God being their help and deliverer again. That's the power of remembering our own stories. That's the power of hearing each other's stories.